Blackwater, The Wagner Group, Executive Outcomes, The Flying Tigers, The Swiss Guard, The White Company, The Knights Templar, The Varangian Guard, Clercus of Sparta, Pythagoras the Spartan, Mentor of Rhodes, Socrates of Achaea. The list is endless. Mercenaries, guns for hire, soldiers of fortune, private military companies, private security contractors, dirty deeds done not so dirt cheap. History is replete with privatized militaries. Call them what you want. They have been around for a very long time, and they are very likely not going away anytime soon. And like it or not, wars are good, very good, for business. Furthermore, history tells us that more people are enslaved and killed by such means as greed, corruption, oppression, and tyranny than by any other means. So choose the red pill, remove your blinders, all of them, and take a good sensory inventory of what you're being told and shown to believe. Because here we go. Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of Oconus, The Contractor's Life. Talking from the relatively insulated and bucolic rural foothills of northwestern Washington State, I'm your host, Scott Dresser. Life as a private security contractor in a hostile or a war-torn zone, or, as some call it, an austere or a non-permissive environment. Well, it is a mixed bag of blessings. Some good and some not so good. All in all, though, private security contracting is much the same as life. It is what you make it. The MENA region, or the Middle East North Africa region. Lands of enchantment, lands of mystery, lands of the old ones and the ancient ones. Myths, legends, folklore, maybe. If you believe what you read in the ancient and the holy texts, then you know that it all centered around what we refer to as the MENA region. That's right, the Mediterranean. And you probably also know that to every legend or myth, there is a base of at least some truth.
All right, folks. That said, welcome back to another episode of Oconus the Contractor's Life. This is season 4, so I'm going to pick up where we left off in the previous episode, as I usually do, right? So we are back in Afghanistan on a project with Blue Hackle in the Bagram area at the Bagram Air Base. And to paint a broad brush stroke of what this place looks like, for those that have never been there, haven't seen it, don't know what it's like, it's an Air Force base that is basically in the middle of a great big bowl area, a valley that's flat and broad. It's kind of pinned between two mountain ranges, flanking on either side, and there is a perimeter road, hardball, that goes all the way around it, kind of an oval type thing, not a complete oval shape, although it kind of sort of is. It does kind of meander a little bit. And then there's ample side roads and by roads and one thing another, some dirt, some asphalt, and then other pathways that have just kind of been made. And then there's areas that have been kind of like sectioned or cordoned off with warnings, like, for example, an old minefield, believe it or not, that's in there. But that's, you know, kind of, and then at one end of it, which was the primary ingress-egress point or entry-exit, there was an Afghan village there that looked like a very small, semi-modern city that branched off onto one side of the base and into villages and huts and one thing another. So it was kind of more or less surrounded, not completely, by Afghans that were living out there. How they came to this arrangement, I don't know. But then on any given day, you would frequently see, sometimes you would see the helicopters like the Apache type, but usually you'd see the A-10 Warthogs flying low and fast over one side of it primarily. And what they were looking for or doing out there is anybody's guess, but you could tell. You kind of knew what was going on. We are talking Taliban country out there. At the other end and along other portions of the base, there were designated egress and ingress points that were not the primary point of entry and exit that predominantly most traffic flowed through. There were other, so these other places were for missions coming and going, whether military or civilian, that were on a escort type mission, be it PSD or what have you. And then, of course, as you might guess, all kinds of facilities along the runway, mostly on one side of it. And then, of course, you know, facilities just everywhere in there, various government agencies from various countries, from private to public stuff. A lot of traffic there, foot and vehicle traffic. I'm not sure which one had more. There was more of, probably more foot traffic than there was vehicle traffic. You know, certainly as you might expect, the majority of it that you would see was daylight hours. At night, things kind of slowed down. Not to say that there weren't night shifts. When I was there on the project for Blue Hackle working there, I worked my share of day and nights. Which one I preferred, I think it just depended on the time of the year. Like in the wintertime, I definitely preferred day shift because it's so freaking cold there. And then, in the summertime, I mean, I liked being out there in the sun. You know, you acclimate to it. It's not that bad. But, you know, night shift was kind of nice. As some folks know, working a night shift when you're in the security field, sometimes things are a little quieter, a little slower. And you know, you don't have all the bravado and chest thumping going on that you frequently see. And that was something that I was really, truly amazed, at this point in my career there in contracting, which was, a lot of companies, you know, things are slowing down. The tempo in Afghanistan was still on a pretty good clip. There was still a lot of stuff going on. It wasn't like Iraq had slowed down quite a bit. But in Afghanistan, the tempo was still there, in terms of a military operational tempo. The private side was semi-similar. But I was just really surprised at how many companies, and specifically the one I was working for at that time, hired people that probably... in hindsight, well, even at the times, some of us knew, you know, that these people just didn't belong here. They either didn't have the proper credentials or enough of them, didn't have the experience and the training and one thing or another. And one thing we came to notice was that a lot of people that were being hired were people that could quickly and easily gain a clearance at whatever level. Because that was key at most, if not all these places. You had to have a clearance, secret, top secret, what have you. And, you know, so it wasn't uncommon to work with people and go, whoa, what is this guy doing here? He does not belong here. He doesn't fit. He doesn't have what it takes. We started seeing that more and more. And it was a source of irritation, not only because, you know, for our natural concerns, if something pops off or something happens that we didn't feel we could count on this person to do what needed to be done and certainly not do it properly and not carry it through and see it to the end. But the other thing is that with those people also came a lot of chest thumping, a lot of braggadocious stuff, a lot of war stories, and you're like just rolling your eyes going, oh man, okay, whatever. So we did see a fair amount of that as the years went on, which was one of the reasons. I mean, there were a lot of reasons, but that was probably one, you know, I say it's a source of irritation, a source of annoyance, but it really wasn't a reason for stopping or quitting what I'm doing. It just kind of went with the territory. And of course, where you worked and the project you're on dictated a lot of that. When I get further into this evolution in my second time there in Afghanistan, there is a project that I was on that was a completely different scenario. But so here we are at Bagram with this group of guys, and fairly early on, I'd say within the first week, one of the guys was, I don't know, he had issues, and not just a few of them, but he started raging at one point, something about the client. I don't remember what it was. And he popped off and got all vocal and loud and started saying stuff that he shouldn't be saying, certainly within earshot of this client rep. Long story short, left the official demarcation zone for where we were at, came back, and I had a stand-up talk with him in front of a couple other guys that agreed, and long story short, was able to, you know, kind of put him in check and put him back where he needs to be. But he was popping off about all kinds of stuff, you know, this project, that, and that project, this, and just, you know, so there was a lot of that. Again, it just depended on the project you're on and who you're working with. And as I've hearkened before, the site managers, campsite manager, what do you want to call him? He is, I think I mentioned this previously in other episodes. He certainly, most definitely did not belong there. Didn't have a military background, didn't have a law enforcement background. And looking into it, he may or may not have been at the in the NOLA region during Hurricane Katrina, but he had photos that he posted to Facebook, even saying stuff like, "Wow, I got really lucky on this one," and it's kind of like, "Yeah, you really did." And so, as I've mentioned before, you know, program manager, country manager, and other people had given us a heads up about this guy. So he was a constant source of irritation because he really had absolutely no idea what he was doing when it came to security, and certainly not in high threat areas. The guy probably would have, you know, if first impressions are anything, when you first lay eyes on this guy as you're walking up to shake his hand, he seems like a genuine, legit dude. But once you start talking with him, if you know what you're talking about, if you've been around, you quickly figure out, whoa, how did this guy fall through the cracks? Well, he did. And he wasn't the only one, but we saw a fair amount of that. So that was there on this project. It was, like I said, it was a, I don't recall what the project contract name and title stuff was, but it was basically security for a spook site that was under construction out there on Bagram. And I remember thinking, don't they already have one of these here? You know, but why they were doing another one and this one in particular. But it was a pretty cool project. Met some really good people there. Had some good times. You know, like I said before, we went through three campsite managers. And at one point, I think it was during the first guy, some of the dudes were saying, "Hey, Scott, you know, why don't you be the manager?" And I, you know, and we went around and around about this, but they were serious. They wanted me to be the campsite manager. And as I've said before, it's not that I wasn't, you know, it's like, well, thank you. You know, I'm humbled, but, you know, that's really not what I want to do. But anyway, long story short, so we went through three of these guys, and there was a lot of stuff that went on, as you might expect, just as in Iraq, and to some extent in Kuwait, but certainly here in Afghanistan. There's we had our share of Afghan locals working, and you'd see them sometimes walking around the base, and they're supposed to have their documents and the papers with them, and you know, just like in Iraq, you can't be sure that the people that are working with you, that they can be trusted. And I don't recollect what this one guy's actual position was. They said he was a translator, interpreter, but I just, he came across to me more of as an annoyance. It's like, why is this guy even here? Long story short, it turns out that he was, once we fleshed this dude out and we started telling people about it, because there were just a lot of things that were off about him. Turns out he wasn't supposed to be there. So, that stuff happens. Anyway, guys, before he left and we didn't see him anymore, because he was there for a while, guys were trying to do things like get stuff that they could take back home, like gems and one thing another, because that country's, pretty rich in natural resources. So guys were trying to get stuff on the cheap, take back home and sell it, at, 4, 5, 10 times whatever they paid for it. He came in one time with a handful of it, and the guys were like, "Woohoo!" Their eyes were all glistening. You could hear the ka-ching in their brains, but you're looking at these, and we really had to approach it very skeptically. We tried to vet the dude a little bit and make sure that his sources were legit. Long story short, turns out that they were low grade at best. So buyer beware. Right? If it's too good to be true, it probably is. So, average day there, a lot of times it just felt like wash, rinse, repeat. We did have our share of excitement going on with incoming stuff. Sometimes, just like any working party, sometimes these construction guys didn't always get along with each other, because you're talking about people from different countries and different nationalities. You're going to have a clash. You never know what the clash is about for sure. It's probably something personal that developed on their own camp. A deal went awry, they have a hypersensitive notion of being insulted and one thing or another. So we had, a share of those. But the primary thing was just reminding everybody there who we were, why we were there. And pretty much, just don't fuck with us, okay? Do your job. Don't fuck with us, because we're not going to tolerate this bullshit. And, one time in particular, I had to lay the hammer down on one guy in particular. And in a line where we were checking these people before they went in. And let's just say it kind of set the tone. It reversed a lot of stuff going on there. And we, for the most part, didn't have any more problems with these guys as they came and went. We had to check on them frequently, whether they were on the second or third floor construction or down on the ground. We frequently had to walk around and check on them, make sure that everything was on the legit, because for whatever reason, they'd get all bent out of shape. And it wasn't an uncommon thing for a while to walk around and find that at least one, probably several of them, were, instead of going to the toilet, they were doing their business right there. Okay, on the building, what would otherwise be a walkway. And it's like, wow, really, guys? So, we have to go down there and contact their people, say, get up there and clean it. We had certain ways of handling it, but, we made it pretty clear, get up there now and don't do it again. And that went on for probably a week or two before it cleaned up. And when I say that, I mean it literally and figuratively. All right. An average day, as I've mentioned before, because of the camp managers we had, the three we went through over the period of time I was there at Bagram, because they all had bullshit excuses why they couldn't or wouldn't come out and help us out. So basically, we were a very small team. We were working 7 days a week. We tried to give each other time off, but it just didn't work. We just didn't have enough guys. We couldn't get enough more guys in. Even after talking with the people at the program level, we just couldn't get more guys in there for whatever reason. Who knows what it came down to. So 7 days a week. When you're not working, those of us that wanted to stay fit, we went to the gym. There were at least two gyms there that were open to us. I think actually there was a third one that I went to. There were a couple or a few defects, so you would grab food, and sometimes you couldn't make it in time and still be to work on time and get everything else you had to do. So there were just times that you couldn't always get the defects. So thank goodness they had plazas, they had food courts and other things so that you could walk or drive over there or get someone to go get you some food and bring it back so you'd have something to eat. So that, working out, sleeping, communicating back home, looking into other projects and one thing another. So, you know, not that, so it's very similar to what you would do here at home, back in the States or wherever you live, except that the tempo, you know, is obviously quite different. But beyond that, I mean, that was kind of an average day, you know, and we wore, you know, what some people would call tactical stuff, but, you know, we wore 511s or proppers or whatever you wanted, but they had to be, you know, some sort of a tactical shirt and trousers, although sometimes we wore a polo shirt. But, you know, and you have the patches and one thing or another you got to have. So people, you know, at a glance can kind of size up, make sure you got your CAC card in your little card carrier that's dangling from your neck. Some people would put it in their pocket. You know, so, you know, you had everything you needed. And, you know, that was pretty much an average day. Wash, rinse, repeat. And, you know, at some point you do this stuff long enough. All the other stuff that's going on, you just kind of take with a grain of salt, just throw it over your shoulder and just move on. You don't really get worked up unless it gets really direct, or really close to you. And then of course, everything else changes. You're doing your other job, so to speak at that point. But I'll go into that stuff a little bit more, a little bit later. For now, that wraps up this episode of Aconis the Contractor's Life. And with that, I will thank you and thank everyone who's listening to this episode for taking time out of your day, afternoon, or evening to listen to me talk about some of my experiences as a private security contractor overseas. Some would call it a private military contractor, and technically it kind of was, contracting with the military, as well as sometimes some of my experiences as a private security contractor here in America. Remember, folks, it takes a team. The grass is not always greener on the other side. Be careful what you wish for. You might just get it. Stay humble, stay safe, and keep others safe by being aware and staying frosty. And until next time, keep it real.
Aconis the Contractor's Life extends a special thank you to music composer Kava Cohen and to Colin Perry of Ninja Tracks for allowing Aconis the Contractor's Life the use of Kava's song, Heavy Clutch, from the music soundtrack to the game Forza Motorsport 7. And also, a big thank you to Andres Rodriguez, who can be found at the Fiverr website for his excellent original music scores.